Hello, hello. Thank you for being with us today. I'm excited for today's episode, but wanted to take a quick moment to talk about prenatal vitamins. As a doula, I encourage my clients to achieve optimal nutrition through food. However, even with the most thoughtfully planned diet, it is nearly impossible to meet the daily requirements through food alone. Ideally, you should start taking a prenatal before you find out you're pregnant, or as soon as you test positive. P.S. If this is you, congrats. Prenatal vitamins help nourish and support your body while helping you grow that cute little human inside. Nutrients like choline and folate in prenatal vitamins support healthy brain and spinal cord development in early stages of pregnancies. Prenatal vitamins are unfortunately not all made the same. My favorite prenatal brand is called Needed. I first discovered them through our Facebook community, actually. They are very supportive of our community and have secured 20% off to all of our mamas with code VBAC20. Go to thisisneeded.com and enter in code VBAC, VBAC20 at checkout for 20% off. Hello, everybody. We have our friend from Connecticut. And you know what? I didn't even ask you, is it Flannery? How do you say your name?
It's Flannery.
That's how I was going to say it. Yes. Okay, Flannery. We have our friend Flannery here, and she's from Connecticut, and she has a bicornate uterus. So this week's focus is on different shaped uteruses or uterine abnormalities, as I'm air quoting, because we know that people have them. People have different shaped uteruses. And sometimes that can impact things like breech babies or even a provider's ability to support. I don't even want to say ability, willingness to support someone, especially when it's in VBAC. And so we're going to be diving into that. And then she's also a NICU mama. So for other NICU mamas, she might have some tips for you along the way. And she just told me before this that she was a labor and delivery nurse before she had her first, right?
Yeah, and then I switched over.
And now she switched over in postpartum, so she knows the field. So we might talk a little bit about labor and delivery nursing and postpartum world at the end.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, well, let's get into your stories.
Okay, thank you. I'm so excited. I would listen to this podcast all the time when I was pregnant. And, you know, at the end when they say, if you'd like to share your VBAC story, and I would say, I will be sharing my VBAC story someday.
I love that. I will be sharing my story. And here you are sharing with all the other women of strength coming to learn and grow and feel empowered.
Yeah, I love it. Well, my first pregnancy was actually an unplanned pregnancy. I had just gotten married, just started a labor and delivery nurse job, and I was noticing that I wasn't feeling great, but I had had some bleeding, which I thought was my period. And so I just was like, you know what, let me take a pregnancy test just to reassure myself, because there's no way that it will be positive. It was, and I was so shocked. I remember taking the test, seeing the two lines, and just my heart dropping. And I thought to myself, like, I am not ready to be a mom. I can't believe that I am having an unplanned pregnancy. Like, this is so crazy. And I was only 25, which I know is not that young, but like up here in Connecticut, it's pretty young.
So what's the average for first-time moms, can I ask?
I'm guessing like 30, 32. Oh, okay. So none of my friends had babies yet or anything. So I felt like very alone and obviously very shocked. And yeah, so I had no idea like how far along I was. I went to the dating ultrasound with my husband at the hospital where I worked, and they put the wand on my belly, and there was like a full baby in there. It wasn't like a bean. It wasn't like a little heartbeat or a blob. It was like a baby. And they said, "You're 11 and a half weeks along."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. And I was beyond shocked. Like, Megan, I had no idea that I was pregnant. I didn't have any symptoms. And as I said, I was having some bleeding. So I thought that that had been my period. But nope.
Oh my goodness. Was it like implantation bleeding? But then that would be like late, too late.
I don't know. I think maybe just like, you know, how some people get first trimester spotting or, you know, bleeding after sex or exercise or something. I'm thinking that's what it was.
Oh, crazy.
I know. So I'd skipped the first trimester and that terrified me because like I wasn't on a prenatal. Like I was having some wine. Like, and I was just like, how could I have missed this? This is embarrassing. I'm a nurse. Like I should
I'm a nurse. Hey,
know this.
listen, like it happens. People talk about it,
It
but I'm sure it was
happens.
such a shock. Like, not only to see those two pink lines and already be shocked that you were not having babies with any of your friends right then, but like,
Yeah.
and that you skipped the whole first trimester. Oh my
Crazy.
goodness. Yeah.
It was crazy, and it took a while to wrap our heads around it. But yeah, and then during the ultrasound, I remember the ultrasound tech saying, like, "Oh, have you ever had an ultrasound of your uterus before?" And I was like, no, like, you know, not thinking anything of it, just focused on the baby. And then I got a call from my doctor a few days later, and she's like, "So it looks like you have a bicornuate uterus. Have you ever heard of that?" And I was like, "No, I've never heard that word before." And she said, "Basically, your uterus is shaped like a heart and it should be shaped like a balloon, kind of." And I was like, okay, I mean, that doesn't sound too bad. And, you know, we hung up and I went on Google and Googled bicornuate uterus. And let's just say, like, the stuff that comes up is not reassuring at all. It's so scary. It says things like, you know, risk of preterm delivery, risk of stillbirth, risk of infertility, you know, risk of malpresentation, just on and on, like postpartum hemorrhage, all of this stuff. So I really broke down, and I remember just crying and crying to my husband. And like, I have this crazy birth defect my whole life, and I've never
Didn't
known
know.
it. Yeah. And I didn't know how it was going to impact my birth or my baby or anything. And that was, yeah, that
Did
was
they tell
definitely
you
scary.
anything like how it could impact your pregnancy or your birth or
Not
future
really.
pregnancies? Okay.
No, this is just like a general a GP doctor that I was seeing, so she didn't really go into it with me, but I definitely spoke about it to the midwives that I was seeing once I established care with them, and they were just kind of like, yeah, it can cause baby to be breech, and that was kind of all they told me about it. Yeah. And I was doing a lot of research, like looking for podcasts and everything about bicornuate uterus and all the things that go along with it, but I couldn't really find much. I think there were maybe like, this was a few years ago, so maybe three or four podcast episodes about bicornuate uterus and breech and uterine malformation. I think now there are more, but at the time it was really hard to find information.
And I still feel like it. I mean, it's 2025. No, 2024. What year are we in? We're almost 2025. We're 2024, and it still is. I mean, there's still not a ton. It's not like a beefy topic that people
No,
dive
it's really
into.
not. And I think I heard that, you know, some people don't know they have it until they get pregnant, which was my case, and they have an ultrasound. And it's hard to tell, like later on in pregnancy, if you have it because, you know, your baby will like stretch out the uterine space. So it's really, you can only tell in the first trimester if you have an ultrasound. So,
Interesting. Good to
yeah.
know.
So, you know, my pregnancy progressed like pretty normally after that. I was very stressed at this new job in labor and delivery that I was working in. And I was seeing like really scary births all the time, like traumatic births and some good ones too. But it kind of put this idea in my head that, you know, you cannot plan your birth and things are so out of your control that there's no reason to have a plan because you're just going to be disappointed anyway. All you can do is go with the flow. So that was my attitude at the time. It's definitely changed since then, but it was definitely interesting trying to be a first-time mom and also learn how to be a labor and delivery nurse and kind of reconcile the two experiences that I was seeing.
I bet. I
Yeah.
bet that'd be really challenging.
It was interesting. And I established care with some midwives who I worked with, and they were highly recommended, but I didn't really feel like they were giving me like the midwife experience that I had heard so many people rave about. And I felt like they really treated me like a coworker instead of a first-time mom when I was going to their appointments. So I was fine with their care. I wouldn't say it was like the best or the worst by any means. And then I realized around like 25, 26 weeks, like, gosh, I'm really feeling this like rock under my ribs all the time. Like, I think that's the baby's head. Like, I think the baby is breech. And then at 28 weeks, I had a growth scan because you have to have growth scans if you have a bicornate uterus. And they were like, yep, sure enough, the baby is breech. And so the midwives told me, okay, you can like do some spinning babies and put an ice pack near the baby's head and like play music down low and all those crazy things that you hear. So I was like, yeah, sure, okay, I'll try it. And I, did a few inversions, but they gave me terrible heartburn. And so I like was not super
Damn.
consistent with that. And the baby just wasn't budging week after week. And eventually it came to like about 35 weeks, and I was getting another growth scan. And I had just worked a very tiring shift at work, and I went to get my ultrasound. And I was kind of like dozing off as she did it. And she stopped the ultrasound and she said, I'm going to send you over to your midwife's office. Go over right now. And I walked over, and the midwife was like, girl, what's going on? And I was like, I don't know. I just had this like pit in my stomach, but I had no clue what was going on. And she's like, you have no fluid. Get back to the hospital. You're going in as a patient now, and we're going to try to rehydrate you. And I was like, what? What is going on? No fluid? What does that mean? So I guess they had found on the ultrasound that my baby's left kidney was super dilated and my fluid was low, which is called oligohydramnios. And I know you've talked about this on the podcast before, but I think they measure it with an AFI, it's called, and it's supposed to be over 8, I want to say. And mine was like a 4,
Still
which
really
is
low. Below
quite
five.
low.
Yeah. Below five. So, but they were just going to rehydrate you. They weren't going to induce you.
Not yet, no.
Yeah,
And
which
they
is
wouldn't have induced
good.
me anyways because my baby was breech.
They wouldn't,
But
yeah.
yeah, they were gonna try to rehydrate me first and see how that went. So they did, and they decided to give me some steroid shots too. And my favorite midwife came in and she said, we're gonna do these steroid shots and we're gonna see if the rehydrating works because, like, I know you've been working hard. Maybe this is just like a dehydration situation because you haven't been able to like take care of yourself properly. And I was like, okay. And then she made a comment about delivery at 37 weeks. And I was like, oh, so this is like a delivery type situation because it really had not sunk in with me yet that this was like that serious. And she was like, yes, oligohydramnios can cause stillbirth, like it's very serious. So probably what we're looking at is like 2 weeks of monitoring and then delivery at 37 weeks, which will be a C-section unless your baby flips. And I was like, oh my God, like, okay.
Yeah. But with
So.
the fluid, did they want to continue giving you fluid? Did they encourage your hydration with electrolytes and everything?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And, I was like chugging water like a maniac for a few days and like coconut water and all this stuff and, getting IV fluid. It did come back up a little bit to
Okay. I was
like
gonna say, did it
a
fix it at all?
six maybe. And then
Still
I was
born,
getting
right?
like a bunch of ultrasounds, and then it went right back down to a four. And so
Okay.
they said, we're going to have you consult with maternal fetal medicine at a bigger hospital on March 9th. And my baby was due April 11th. So
Oh.
this was like a lot earlier than I was expecting anything to happen. But
Yeah. Yeah.
we went to this appointment to get this more detailed ultrasound, and the doctor comes in and she's like, seems very nervous. And that's not what you want. Like a
Not
doctor to
a good
seem
feeling.
nervous.
No.
No. And she's like, so it looks like your baby's left kidney is non-functional. Like it's just a cluster
Oh.
of cysts. And I was like,
Oh.
oh my God. I was so terrified. I just had no clue. This didn't show up on the 20-week ultrasound or anything. And she's like, and your fluid is still super low. So we did an NST. They sent us home. And I was just kind of like waiting around at home with my husband for my midwife to call to kind of make a plan. And I was like, am I going back to work tomorrow? Am I gonna be
Have a
having this baby?
baby. Yeah.
And she called me and she's like, so, this isn't what I was expecting to tell you today, but I've been like consulting with like the neonatologist here and some OBs. And since you've already had your steroid shots, we want you to go to the hospital now to have your baby tonight. And she's like, don't rush down the highway in the snow, but this is an urgent or emergent situation. So good luck. You'll be in good hands. And I was like, what in the world? I was so taken aback. I couldn't believe it. And they were also transferring me to a different hospital from the one that I worked at and had planned to deliver at. So,
Is it because of the
yeah,
NICU situation or
because of the
why?
NICU.
Okay.
Yeah, because this bigger hospital had a capability for surgery and my hospital did not. It was like a situation that it was a small hospital and, a situation that they weren't really comfortable with. So, we hopped in the car and drove through this big snowstorm, and I was just like crying and shaking and just had no, we had no idea. We were both terrified. We had no idea what we were about to walk into. But when we met our OB, she walked into the room and she just radiated like calmness and kindness and peace. And she was just an angel. Like she made
Good.
us feel so safe. And so they were, monitoring the baby and putting my IV in. And I was still trying to wrap my head around the fact that I was having a baby tonight and
Yeah.
like wondering, is this baby going to be okay? Like, what is going on here? And we walked down the hall to the OR and I kissed my husband goodbye. And I remember just thinking, like, okay, like, here we go. There's no going back now. And the only way that I could stay calm really was to like surrender any of the control that I thought I had and really just trust in God and trust in the people who are going to do the surgery on me. And, I lay down on the table and the anesthesiologist, I remember him being so kind and he was like petting my head and talking to me. And my husband came in and they were setting up like the drapes. And my doctor, who I had just met, like leaned her head over and she said, this is where I had my first daughter. And that just made me feel so happy. Like things are going to be normal again. And, she had a C-section too. And like it made me feel very safe. And,
Yeah.
Everything went really well during the operation. I remember I could see the reflection of the operation in the lights that they have above you. I bet other moms will know what I'm talking about, but like they have these big like OR lights and I could like kind of see what they were doing,
Yeah,
which is
you can. They're like
freaky.
li they're like mirrors, but they're
Yes, I know.
not.
They should like come up with something better, I think.
Yes. For those who don't want to watch or see anything,
Close your
just turn to
eyes.
the side.
Yeah.
Close your eyes, turn to the side. Yeah.
Yeah. And they said after a few minutes, they're like, okay, here he comes. And then he's out. I didn't hear anything. And I heard someone say, okay, I need to take him. And I could tell that was the neonatologist saying like they needed to work on him a little bit. And they took him over to a corner where we couldn't see or hear anything that was going on. We could just hear people talking. And eventually we heard a little cry, and my husband started to cry, and I looked at him and I smiled, and I just felt, relief that he was alive, but
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything. Like, I just felt this nothingness.
Oh,
And
I
I
can
was,
so relate to that.
yeah, it's so strange, and it's just
Weird.
not what you're hoping to feel in this big important moment, you know. And I remember the neonatologist, after a while, they, like, he was breathing on his own, and he had peed and pooped, and they, like, had showed us pictures of him, and she walked over with him in his arms, like this little bundle of blankets, but she was standing, like, pretty far away, like maybe like 6 or 10 feet away. And she was like, "Okay, so you know the plan. Like, we need to go check his kidneys in the NICU. Like, what's his name?" And I said, "I don't know. I need to see his face." And she, like, flashed the blanket at me, like flashed it down so I could see his face. I couldn't see anything. And I said, I don't know. I don't know what his name is." And she walked out with him.
Oh.
And that is just like the worst memory from that whole experience. Like, the surgery itself was really good, and the care I had was great, but I'll never get that moment back. She could have brought him over to give me a kiss or see his
Yeah.
face, and it
Just
was six
touch his
hours
face against
until
your face.
it was so long until I could see him
Meet
and
your
meet him in the
baby.
NICU. And I just think about that all the time, So, I did get to go meet him after a few hours, and he was doing great. I didn't recognize him at first when my husband rolled me over to his isolette in the NICU, which was hard. But as soon as I held him, I just had this, like, overwhelming, like, rush of love, and it hasn't changed to this day. Like, he's just such a joy, and he turned out to be fine. Like, his kidney was normal. It's resolved on its own. It wasn't like
Really?
a cluster of cysts like they had thought. And yeah, he's doing great. He's like a very rambunctious, very smart little 2.5-year-old now. And
Good.
yeah, I'm so grateful that I have him, so grateful that I accidentally got pregnant
Yes. Yes.
with him.
He was meant to be, and he
He
was going to make
totally
sure
was.
that he was. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry that you had that experience, though.
Oh, thanks.
I want to say it's unique, and but it's not, and
It's
it
totally not.
sucks.
Yeah.
And I hope that as people are listening, if they're in the birth world of labor and delivery nurse or OB or midwife or whatever it may be, please be mindful of mom.
Yeah.
Please be mindful of mom. Don't forget that she doesn't feel these things because she does. She needs to see her baby. She needs to touch her baby. She needs to kiss her baby. And if it is a true emergency, like true emergency, understandable. But in a sense of this, it doesn't sound like it really was a true emergency. And
It
they
wasn't,
went
it
over and
wasn't.
they took a lot of time in the corner with your baby and then came and left. And they didn't need to just come and leave. Like,
Right. Especially when baby is breathing on its own and stuff, you can take 10 seconds to let mom give baby a kiss,
Yes, because
Yeah.
it will impact
It
mom.
totally will.
And here you are 2 years later, still feeling that. And you're like, I still think about that.
I
And
do.
I saw it in your eyes as you were telling the story. Like, you feel that still. That's there. And I hope that people can remember that protocols and what you think needs to happen and all these things do not trump mom.
Totally,
Right?
totally.
Yeah. Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage. A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive, we definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode. Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today. So, having a NICU baby, how long? So wait, what was the exact gestation?
He was 35 and 5.
Okay, so as a preterm cesarean as well.
Yes.
Did they have to do any special scar or anything like that because it was preterm?
No, thankfully not. But that's they did good. Say he was like very stuck up in my ribs and, you know, mm-hmm. he had the cord around his neck and there was mm-hmm. meconium. And so, you know,
there were things.
I know that, you know, he needed to come out that way because mm-hmm. I don't think he could have flipped like if they did an ECV or, you mm-hmm. know, I don't know if he would have tolerated labor if he was head down even. So,
yeah. But... yeah, that's definitely an early baby, but good thing that all is well, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he did great. It was a rocky start, but he's doing great now. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for NICU moms listening?
Oh, yes. There is this foundation that will pay for your parking costs while you're in the NICU. And I didn't know about it in time. And parking can get very expensive when you're visiting your baby. If you just Google, yeah, like parking foundation for NICU mm-hmm. parents, I'm sure it'll come up because I can't remember the exact name.
I'm going to look it up while you start your next story and we'll make sure to have that in the show notes if I can find it.
Yes, yes.
Okay, keep going.
All right. So my next pregnancy, I was determined to do everything right this time. And I was like, you know what? The last pregnancy was so rocky and so unexpected that this time I'm going to do everything right and therefore nothing can go wrong. I think people have that feeling a lot, which is so irrational, but we can't help it. So yeah. I did go back to see my OB who delivered Freddie, my son. And because I just loved her, I thought she was wonderful. And I just wanted to like see what her opinion was about like why I've had those complications in my first pregnancy and see what she thought about a VBAC, because even though I wasn't sure if I could have a VBAC, I was interested in it. And she was kind of like, you know, lifted out all these rules that she had about VBAC, about like, you know, you can't be preterm, you have to go into labor naturally, like all of the things that you say are red flags on the podcast. And I was like,
I'm like, all the normal things, yeah, all red flags.
Yes. And I mean, I loved this doctor. And I think if I was going to have a repeat C-section, I would have gone back to her because she was awesome. But that wasn't like the experience I wanted to have this time. So I did a little research and I found this midwife practice that everyone recommended to me, and I decided to go with them instead. Yeah, and this pregnancy was like super uneventful. I was very conscious of like taking care of myself and, you know, taking walks a lot and prenatal yoga and like being on top of my vitamins and all that sort of thing. And I was very religious about positioning and spinning babies, because I was like, if I can just get my baby head down from the beginning, I think that I can do the VBAC, because with a bicornuate uterus, like you have less time to flip them. So with a normal uterus, a normally shaped uterus, baby can flip like up until the very last minute if they're breech. but with a bicornuate uterus, first of all, you'd have more of a chance of baby being breech and less of a chance for them to flip based on the shape of your uterus. There's just not enough, like not as much room. So I was like trying to sit on my yoga ball and doing all these stretches, and I was thinking, like, gosh, this is so unrealistic. Like, who's not going to sit on their couch for 9 months? Like, I have to sit on my couch. Like, I can't be walking 3 miles every day. And but then I'd go back and forth in my head and be like, well, do you want a VBAC or not? Like, you have to be religious about this. But you don't have to do everything, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, you'll
Don't.
try your best, but you have to do what's right for you, and you can't like go to the extremes.
I love that you pointed that out. So with my second baby, I was doing the red raspberry leaf. I was doing the dates. I was doing all the things. And even with my third baby, I was the one that didn't sit on the couch for 9 months and still had a posterior baby. I'm just gonna say that. I still had a posterior baby. I had a head down, but I still had a posterior. But actually, he was going breech too throughout
Oh my
pregnancy. But
gosh.
yes, he was such a stinker. But I did do all those things. I did the dates. I did the tea. I did the whatever, all of it, right? And for me, with my third, I had to dial back a little bit and say, okay, I'm gonna do everything I feel is right for this pregnancy. And
Yeah.
dates wasn't one of those. I actually didn't do the date thing. And I know that there was some evidence on that, but I just didn't do it. It didn't feel right to me. But I did other things like chiropractic care, and
Yes.
I did drink tea, and I hired a midwife and decided to go out of hospital, hired a birth team, did education, right? And so I think the biggest thing is doing all the things that stick out and call to you. Because
Yeah.
there are so many things. We give so many tips, and some tips might not apply well to you. Walking 3 miles, it's a lot. It's a
It is a
lot.
lot.
Okay, it's a lot. But if you can walk a mile, that's better than not walking any.
Right.
Right? And so trying to go and find what is sitting right for you in this pregnancy, in this baby, in this birth, and doing those things, and then knowing you did all the things that you could that felt right for you.
Yes, totally. I
Yeah.
totally agree. Yeah. And I knew, I could do all these things and baby might still be breech. And baby was breech at my anatomy scan, and then again at 28 weeks at my other growth scan. And I remember going into the midwife and just saying, like, what can I do? Like, and she was kind of saying, nothing will supersede the shape of your uterus. You can do everything. Why don't you just like visualize? Because then at least you'll feel like you're doing something. And I was so mad after I left that appointment. I was like, you can't tell me that I can't do anything to make this baby flip, that it's all down to the shape of my uterus. So I kept trying. I was like 28 weeks, and I was going to the chiropractor and acupuncture and inversions. This time I was really good about the inversions, even though it gave me heartburn. And it worked. The baby did flip. And I remember actually listening to a podcast from an episode from the VBAC link, and it was about someone who was trying to flip a breech baby, and she flipped her breech baby, and I was like, okay, this gives me so much hope, like I can do it. And it paid off because the baby did flip. I'm so happy. And yeah, I at one ultrasound they did pick up an issue with the kidney. I remember being so upset because it was the same issue that my son had had, but like very mild, and the baby had been breech at that point. And I was like, I'm trying so hard, I'm doing everything right, and it's not working. And like history is just repeating itself. That's what it felt like to me. But ended up finding out that the kidney actually resolved at the next ultrasound, and the baby had flipped. And so it's like, oh, all of my prayers are being answered. I couldn't believe it. I was so happy when we got the results from that next ultrasound. And so I just like continued doing my prep. And I was planning to deliver in the hospital. I had a doula who was amazing, and she was just like with me every step of the way, like talking me down when I was anxious and telling me all the different things I could try and coming up with plans for repeat C-section or, vaginal birth. And I had really wanted to go without the epidural because I didn't mention, but I got a spinal headache from my spinal last time, and that was just awful. Like it was almost worse than the C-section pain. Like,
I've actually heard that.
oh.
And because it just nothing really takes it away, like full on.
Yeah, except lying down.
Lying
And
down.
I was like, I'm trying to visit my baby in the NICU. I can't just be lying in my hospital bed all day. So I thought, if I can avoid an epidural just so that I don't even have the chance of having a spinal headache again, that's what I'm gonna do. So I was reading Ina May and I was like watching all the YouTube videos and doing everything that I could. But it got to be a lot, it got to be like, oh my gosh, so much work to prep for this birth. And the whole time, you don't know if it's a given, if you're going to get that VBAC.
I
So
know.
sometimes it can feel like, why am I doing this? Yeah.
It is hard. It is hard because we don't know until it's done.
Exactly. Till it's 100% over. Yeah. So, 37 weeks came, 38 weeks, 39 weeks, and I was like feeling overdue basically since 35 weeks.
I'm sure. I'm sure you're like, I don't know how much longer I can go.
I mean, I was definitely hoping to make it to term this time, and I was so happy that I did. It was a big, big moment when I hit the 37-week mark, but then just kept going and going and going. And I was like, am I ever going to go into labor? Like, what am I doing wrong? And I was walking, it was the end of July and it was so hot out, and it was hard to like get out there and walk. And I eventually hit my due date, which was July 25th, and I got a membrane sweep on that day, which was not super fun, and it made me lose my mucus plug but and have a few cramps, but like nothing else. I was very hopeful that it would kick start labor, but it did not. And eventually I just thought, like I just have to let go. The baby will come. You might have to have an induction, but you just have to relax. And finally, 5 days after my due date, which I know is not that long, but it felt
But
very
it
long.
feels long. It feels long when you're almost 6 weeks after you had your first baby.
Yes, exactly. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this period cramp feeling. And I was like, oh my God, is this it? Like, am I in labor? And I managed to like calm down and go back to sleep. And I just put my hand on my belly and I was like, okay, is this, am I gonna get another cramp? And another one came, and they came and they started coming like every 20 minutes. And eventually I had to wake my husband up because it was like pretty painful by that point. Maybe like 2 or 3 hours in, I just squeezed his hand. He was still sleeping and he's like, oh, what's going on? And I was like, I think I'm in labor. And he said, I was having a dream that
Oh my gosh. You guys were both willing it in.
Yes, exactly. It's like we're on the same wavelength. And so, the contractions kept coming, but they just felt like very mild period cramps. And I had an appointment at 8:15, a midwife appointment at 8:15, and I decided to go in to see if I was in early labor. And she checked me and she said I was 3 or 4 centimeters dilated and like almost completely effaced. And she said, your cervix feels labory. And I was like, okay, I think today is really the day, because I was convinced that it was prodromal labor or, gonna fizzle out or something. And so we went all the way back home, and my plan was to labor at home for as long as possible and like have my doula come over. And so I said goodbye to my little 2-year-old, and my mom was taking him to hang out with her while we were in the hospital. And I remember she had him say to me, like, good luck and be strong. And the sound of his little voice saying that to me, like, literally just sustained me through the entire labor. Like,
I'm
it was
sure.
replaying in my head, like, in the hardest moments, I could just hear him saying that, and it just meant so much to me. And yeah, we just hung out at home, and I was getting pretty, like, irregular timed contractions, and I was wondering why they weren't getting closer together, because sometimes they'd be close together, sometimes they'd be spaced apart, but they were definitely getting stronger. And so I got in the bath or the shower, and I was leaning over and swaying, moaning, doing all the things that you're supposed to do, like the low-toned moaning and the breathing. And I eventually had my doula come over after one really bad contraction, and I was like, what's going on? Like, why isn't it picking up? Like, why aren't they getting closer together? I don't know. Should I go to the hospital? What's going on? And she said, I was really afraid of the car ride because it was like about 40 minutes in the car. And she said, you know, I think what's happening is you have this mental block about the car ride, because this whole time I was like, what if I have the baby in the car? What if I have the baby in the car? I'd heard a lot of stories about car babies, and I'd actually recently had a patient who had a car baby at work. And so she's like, I think you have this mental block, and once you get to the hospital, your body's going to let you get fully into labor. So I do think you should go. And I was like, okay, let's go. And I called the midwives to let them know we were coming. And my favorite midwife was on, the one who I had hoped this whole time, who was going to deliver my baby. And she was only on for a 12-hour shift, and it was already like halfway through her shift. And I was like, oh gosh, I'm so glad she's going to be there. And we drove down to the hospital, and it was this like very hot, very bright, humid day. And I was like, I just don't want to be here. I just want to be like in a cold, dark room. And I remember as we turned onto the street that the hospital is in and like pulled in the driveway, my contractions like boom, boom, boom,
Ramped
were
right
like
up.
ramping right up. And I was like, Ashley, my doula, I was like, you are so right. This is exactly what happened. And so got into triage, and I was making a lot of noise. Like, it was very intense at that point. And they checked me, and I was 4 centimeters, 100% effaced. And I wasn't too disappointed that I wasn't further along, because I was like, this feels pretty intense. Like, I think things are really happening. But they said, you've picked a very popular day to give birth. Like, there are no rooms available on labor and delivery. And I was like,
Stop.
no.
What?
No. And I was especially nervous because, you know, working in the field, I've seen how a busy unit can really affect the care that is given. And it shouldn't be that way, but it totally is.
The reality
And
sometimes.
yeah, my sister-in-law had given birth recently on a very, very busy day and had a very difficult birth and a very not attentive staff. And so that was like one of the things I was really afraid of, that I was going to give birth on a super busy day. And sure enough, I did. But my care was excellent, thankfully. Yeah, we eventually waited in triage for the a room to be ready, and it was the tub room that became available, because there's one tub room in labor and delivery. And I was so excited to get into that tub. I jumped right in as soon as we got there. I mean, not jumped, like waddled right in. And it felt so good. Like, the water felt amazing. But I did find it like very hard to like maneuver and get in the right position to work through a contraction in the tub, because it was kind of weirdly shaped. So I didn't stay in there super long, but I was very surprised at how intense the contractions were, which sounds silly, but they just really like took over. And I was hoping to use some like coping techniques, like music, or like my rebozo, or like I brought my massage gun. I brought all this like toolkit of stuff, but in the moment, all that was going through my head during a contraction was like cursing, and I need the epidural. Like, I need the epidural. And so I was like squeezing onto my husband's hand so hard, and my doula had this like spiky silver ball that you could use for counter pressure. And so I was like squeezing that in my hand so hard, breathing. I labored on the toilet for a bit, in the tub, on the bed. I was moving around. I could not be lying down. And they were having to use continuous monitoring, which I didn't really mind. And the nurse was like very good about not being intrusive about that. Like, she would just like follow me around with the monitor. And the midwife who I was hoping to have, she was just there with me the whole time. And she was holding the monitor onto my belly and speaking kind words to me. And she just, I remember going through this terrible contraction and looking over at her, and she's just sitting serenely in her rocking chair, just, looking at me. And in my head, I was like, how can you be so calm? Like, help me do something. But,
Gosh, I
she
can
was just
relate.
being present.
Do something, help me.
Help me, help
Sometimes
me.
just being present is what you need to do. They need
It
to do.
is. It totally was. She was super
Yeah.
hands off. And, but in the moment, you're like, God, somebody do something to help me. So eventually I was, just sitting on the toilet. The midwife had dimmed the lights, and my husband was just there speaking to me. And I had been making these very loud moans through each contraction. And then during one of them, I started grunting, and I knew exactly what that meant, and that I was like pushing involuntarily. And I had been hoping to feel the fetal ejection reflex. And I think that's what this was, because my body completely took over. Like, there was no way that I could have not pushed during these contractions. And the pain of the contraction was so intense, but it would go away when I pushed. And then I would just feel this like really uncomfortable pressure, but at least the pain of the contraction was going away. And I had been pushing for like maybe 5 minutes, and my midwife was all excited. And I was like, okay, please, can you check me? And she's like, no, just go with your intuition, listen to your body. And I was like, no, I need you to check me, because I did not want to be pushing on an incomplete cervix. And so she did, and I was a 9 and like 100% effaced. And she's like, okay, you can definitely push. That cervix is just gonna melt right
Melt
away.
away.
Yes. And I tried the nitrous, and while I was pushing, but I really hated how it like restricted my breathing, and it also made me throw up everywhere. And
Really?
yes, like
Interesting.
so much puke. It was so embarrassing. It was like splashing on everyone's shoes. So I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, everyone.
Oh.
Oh, but I pushed on the toilet for a little bit, and then I moved over to the bed. And I went over to the bed because when I was on the toilet, I felt something coming out between my legs, and I reached down, and it was the bubble of amniotic fluid. It hadn't
Your
popped
bag of
yet.
waters.
My
Yeah.
bag of waters was coming out, and I think I said to my husband, I was like, do you want to touch it? And he's like, no.
Just feels like a water balloon.
It felt exactly like a water balloon. Yeah. And I went over to the bed and got on my side, and I was, pushing so hard, just like totally going with my intuition. But it wasn't like the type of peaceful, like breathing that, people tell you to do, like the J breathing or anything. There was no way I could breathe through these contractions and these pushes. I was totally, holding my breath and bearing down. But that's just what was right for me in the moment.
Yeah.
So they were saying, like, can you feel the baby moving down? And I was like, no, not at all. And I think that's because the bag of waters was still intact. I couldn't feel anything except this really uncomfortable pressure. So they said, put your hand in or your fingers inside yourself and see if you can feel a baby's head. And I put my fingers past the bag of waters, and I could feel the baby's head right there. And I pushed, and I could feel the baby move down. And it was the most incredible, coolest moment of the birth. I
Yeah.
loved that. And so my midwife said, okay, baby's definitely feeling the squeeze. Like, her heart rate was going down a little bit. And she said, turn on to your left side. And with this next contraction, let's have the baby. And so I pushed as hard as I possibly could and just felt this release of pressure. I had no idea what was going on, but I had this cold cloth over my face, so I couldn't see anybody. But I heard cheering, and then I felt this warm, wet baby like come up onto my belly, and I was laughing and crying, and everyone was saying, yay, like you did it. And I was just like, oh my God, what happened? It
Just like
was
that.
surreal. It was so incredible. And, you know, she started crying right away. We didn't know she was a girl. And my husband looked down between her legs and we both looked at the same time and said, "It's a girl." And I said, "I knew you were a girl." And, you know, she just stayed with me the whole time, right onto my chest. And it was just the best feeling. I was so overjoyed.
So amazing. It's so amazing with feedback how the whole room sometimes can just erupt with joy and you did it and screams and joy, joyful laughs and
Yeah,
oh
it was
man.
beautiful. And it was so intense in a way that I hadn't been expecting it to be. You know, it was a calm, beautiful birth, but the intensity of the contractions and the way that my body completely took over, and I was just like along for the ride, you know, I was just riding the waves. So
Riding,
crazy.
truly riding that wave. We talk about it in
Yeah.
hypnobirthing and riding the wave, but that wave came over, and like you said, like your body was just like, okay, I've got this. Let's go. And here you went, and this baby came out pretty quickly, it sounds like.
Yeah, she was born at
Once.
7:23 p.m. and I had felt my first contraction at, you know, 2 a.m. or something. So it wasn't like the shortest labor, but once I got to the hospital, it was like 5 or 6 hours. So it was pretty quick in the end there. And she came out in call, her head
She
did, and
did.
then as her body came out, it popped. So like almost in call, I guess, which I thought was so cool.
Oh my goodness, that is so awesome. I love it. I've seen a couple
Yeah.
in my doula career, and it is
Yes.
so cool looking. And a lot of people
Awesome.
have said, oh, vaginal birth can't have in-call babies. Oh, yes, they can. Yes, they can. 100%.
Yes.
And I love that you had mentioned that, once I got to the hospital. So sometimes, and I've had this happen with doula clients where I'm noticing this pattern of kind of like what you're saying, like inconsistency. And a lot of the times the client is saying things like, should I go? Should I go? Is it okay
Yes.
to be here still? How much longer should we stay? And they're saying these questions because inside there's a lot going on. And I had a client that I said, you know what? I think we should go. I think you're going to feel safer there. It seems like you're going to feel safer there. The second we got there, things ramped up. Doctor didn't even make it. Baby slid out on the bed. Like, seriously, the second she got there, like her body just released. It was almost like her epidural. Sometimes with an epidural, we get an
Yeah.
epidural and our body's able to relax. If our mind is not confident and comfortable, we can't let our bodies labor sometimes. And so I love that you pointed that out. And I wanted to talk a little bit more really quickly on the uterine types of uterine abnormalities or different types of uteruses. So as she was saying, you have a bicornate uterus, which means it's a heart-shaped uterus. Then there's, okay, I'm probably gonna butcher these names, so especially if you're a provider and you're listening, but I'm like, I don't really know how to say all these words. But is it arcuate uterus, which is similar to a bicornate uterus, but with less of a dip in the heart shape. So it's like an oddly shaped heart, or not, it's like asymmetrical in my mind. That's how I envision it. And then there's a septate uterus, which means there's a divide down the two parts of the membrane of the wall. And then there's a unicornate uterus, which is when the fallopian tube has an irregular shape to it. And then I always butcher this one. It's like I don't even know how to say it. Didophilus, I don't even know. Like,
Sorry, I can't help you on that one.
how is it? It's like didophilus. I'm just gonna stop trying. But that is when you're born with two uteruses, which does happen. And one baby can be in one uterus, and we can have another uterus over here. So those are all abnormalities of uteruses. And of course, we have different shapes, sizes, all the things. And so I wanted to just have a link in the show notes for that as well, so you can read more on each of those types of uteruses. And then tell me if this is the right link. I found Jackson's Chance Foundation,
Yes, that's what it
Why
is.
Parking Matters. Okay,
Yes.
So it looks like this is inspired, it's a foundation inspired by another person's story, a baby, another NICU story. It said that,
I
yeah, so
believe his
it's,
parents set it up. Jackson's parents set it up. Yeah.
they're, wow, this story, it's precious and inspiring, and wow, these parents are incredible. And then it does show that you can donate or sponsor a parking pass. They talk about the why, and all of that. So this is so awesome, and I'm going to make sure that we have that in the show notes. So if you know a NICU baby, or you know someone that knows they're going to have a NICU baby, or whatever it may be, don't be like Flannery and find out later, right? This is how we all learn, and this is how, like, we find
Yes.
out when it's too late, and then we have to go show on. So thank you for sharing that tip, because I actually never even had heard of it, because I'm probably not a NICU mom.
Yeah. I hope it helps someone.
Yes. Thank you again so much for sharing your
Oh my
story.
gosh, this is amazing. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.